Good morning, honorable members, standing committee finance, officials from parliament, officials from national treasury, and ERBA. The meeting today is has been called to get a briefing from treasury and ERBA on the auditing professions amendment bill B2 2020. The meeting is officially open. You are all welcome. Roll call and of attendance and apologies. Do we have apologies?
Dion George said.
Dion George has apologized. Is that the only apology that we have?
Yes, sir. That's the only one we have.
Okay. I would also like to apologize. I'm attending to something even now as I'm speaking. I'm driving.
Mm-hmm.
So I will request Honorable Abraham in between to chair for me. Noxie, are you there?
I'm here, sir. I'm here, sir. You can start the meeting. I'm here to whip you.
Okay. In case you have got trouble, you can also check with Murolong. Because Credog sometimes have got issues with technology. But be that as it may, I will request you to chair the meeting in between. So item three is the briefing by National Treasury and ERBA on the audit profession amendment bill. Over to you, National Treasury and ERBA. And then let me also hand over to Honorable Abraham. And as I've said, if you have technical glitches, Honorable Abraham, you'll request Murolong to relieve you. But for now, I'm handing over to you.
Okay, sure. Thanks so much, Chair. Honorable members, good morning. As the Chair has said, we expect a briefing. And if possible, Teboho, can we have the agenda flighted so we know what we're dealing with? Are we getting any response, Teboho?
Yes, ma'am, we can hear you.
Yes, I just said that if it is possible to flight the agenda, I'll be very happy.
Oh, okay.
Okay, is it happening, Teboho?
I'm trying to do that. I'm struggling with it.
Is it happening? Okay, if you are struggling with that, Teboho, can we have a treasury presenting, as the chairperson has indicated? A treasury, can you indicate who is going to present on your behalf?
Thank you, and good morning to the chair and the co-chair and all the honourable members, and also the colleagues from the profession and ERBA. My name is Cora Maria. I'm the acting accountant general, and I'll be leading the team from National Treasury. By way of introduction, we've got old faces that hopefully most of you are familiar with today, Advocate MP van Schoor and Advocate Alway Malahutsi. They're from our Legislation Department, National Treasury. And then I also got Mr. Nkanyiso Sikobi from our Financial Stability Unit. And then if I may, Chair, if I can just hand over to Janita from IRBA to introduce her team as well.
Thank you. Go ahead, IRBA.
Good morning. Hi, I'm sorry, I was actually on a call, but just for quick introductions, we've got, it's myself, Janita John, the CEO of IRBA, as well as it's, I've got Gillian Bailey and Rebecca Motsepe joining us as well today. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
I'll hand over to the legal team here to do the presentation. Thanks.
Okay.
Good morning, Acting Chair and other honourable members. I'm just going to ask if they can load the presentation, please, on the screen before we start.
Temuco? Alan?
Teboho, morning, it's Alan. Can you make me co-host and I'll try and do it from my side?
Okay.
Is the presentation on the screen?
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, it is. We can go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, we can go to the next slide because we already introduced it. Just briefly to indicate the documents that we submitted to the committee earlier this week. Firstly, it was a
part Please of- talk louder.
Okay, sorry. The first document that we submitted to the committee earlier this week was the public consultation report, which is basically a comic matrix that indicates the public submissions received and our responses. Then we also submitted the Auditing Profession Act as it provides currently showing proposed amendments, including those in the bill that's before Parliament and also proposed amendments that we indicated in our comments matrix document. And then there was also queries during the public submissions or the public hearings and in the submissions made about the socioeconomic impact assessment that which we indicated were conducted during the previous round and these amendments were part of the Financial Matters Amendment Bill. Next slide, please. Just a bit more detail about the comment matrix, what it consists of, as I indicated, the submissions of stakeholders, and then it contains treasuries and the IRBA's responses, and where applicable proposed amendments in a column in your far right that you will see. Then it also contains technical refinements proposed by National Treasury and IRBA that we picked up during the review of the bill. And then the comments matrix is organized according to the order of the clauses in the bill. So we start with the first section, for instance, section one that's being amended in clause one and continues. Then also to indicate, after the public hearings, Treasury and the IRBA consulted SAICA, Deloitte, and Ernst & Young on certain of the issues that they raised in their submissions before the standing committee that took place last week. Then, and we also shared some comments with proposed amendments with them for their input. Then I just wanted to make a broad indication. There's a number of proposals that were made that, in our view, it's outside the scope of the amendments before the committee. But we believe they have merits in them, and we should consider them in a future review of the bill. For example, the proposed expansion of the scope to include accountants, and also whether we should include the mandatory rotation rule in the bill or in the act or not. Then I think what is important for us, why we request the committee to proceed with the areas of amendment in the bill as it stands, because these amendments are quite important to strengthen the governance of the board and also to improve the investigating and disciplinary processes of IRBA to deal with the alleged improper conduct by auditors. Next slide, please. Now, we've identified some key issues raised in the public submissions that we will deal with in the presentation. Now, the first matter is governance matters that basically deal with the board. And I want to indicate there's one additional slide that we inserted that was not part of the slides that was circulated to the committee that deals with a comment from one of the commentators regarding section 4 of the bill. And so there's an additional slide 8, that deals with this matter. But we did share this, as you can see, the presentation is with the committee. So that's the only change that we made, is that additional slide that when my colleague deals with it, he will...
Can advocate Pansko raise her voice? We can't hear her. We're struggling.
Okay, sorry. I'll just repeat. We're on the I'll just up my volume, sorry. We've identified key issues from the public submissions that we deal with in this presentation. Obviously, there's many other matters dealt with in the comment matrix, but the committee will see the responses in that matrix. Now, the first matter that we raise is governance matters, which I think in your slide it's called board matters, but it's slightly wider because it deals with a provision for a regulatory strategy for the board, which was called the policy framework in the bill that was tabled. And we expanded on that provision in view of the comments of one of the commentators on the bill. Then we also deal with disciplinary committees, the disciplinary committee and the panels of the discipline. We deal with the referral of non-audit matters to professional bodies, then search and seizure powers, and then also sanctions and specifically the determination of the maximum fine which is provided for in the bill. And then also the question of reconsideration of disciplinary decisions, which is related to the issue whether there should be an internal appeal or an appeal to the courts. And then lastly, provisions pertaining to protection and the disclosure of information by the IRB in when it does its work. I'm going to hand over to my colleague, Elva Mulahutsi, to deal with the details of all these matters I've raised. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mulahutsi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to honorable members and to colleagues from National Treasury and IRBA, and also greetings to the guests that have joined us in this meeting to this morning. MP, if you can move to the next slide. As MP indicated, I am going to deal with the rest of the presentation, trying to indicate the responses to the different comments that have been made by the stakeholders. So the first key issue there relates to what we refer to there as governance matters. And the first slide deals with comments on section 11, which is found in clause 3 of the deal, and that would be on page 40, from page 47 of the comment matrix. And the first comment relates to the composition of the board. The comment is that the amendment bill should also include in the board membership currently registered auditors, and also that the bill should increase the legal representation in the board. And our response is that the inclusion of currently registered auditors on the board may impede IRBA's independence, and it may also result in IRBA's membership with international regulatory bodies withdrawn, which is a very important matter for the independence of IRBA as a regulatory body. However, we have made proposed amendments, and to the effect that the number of formally registered auditors and legally qualified persons in the board be increased from 1 to 2. So meaning that instead of having one formally registered member and one legally qualified person appointed in the board, we're proposing that the number be increased to 2 for each. So it will be 2 formally registered auditors and 2 legally qualified persons appointed in the board. Next slide, MP. And then the other comment that was received related to the prohibition on membership to committees and the board on the basis that if a person, in that we should prohibit a member from, a person from becoming a member if he or she shares profits or interest with a registered auditor or any person related to a registered auditor. And the comment is supported, and as a result of that, we are now proposing an amendment to section 11.8 and also the insertion of section 11.9, and would also be proposing amendments to section 24 and 24A respectively. And the importance of this proposed amendments is that we now include reference to the sharing of interest, and we then also delete reference to candidate registered auditors. But the other most important issue is that we then also define what a related person is for purposes of this section 11.8 and the other sections that would be amended accordingly. Next slide. MP did indicate that there was a slide that was added after the previous presentation had already been sent, and this is the slide. And this relates to a comment regarding the current provision which enables allows IRBA to determine a policy framework with the approval of the minister. And the comment there was that there is no provision to indicate the time frame within which that policy framework must be determined. However, in response to that comment, we decided to basically amend section 4.3 in accordance with what is provided for currently, as you can see in the slide. And instead of the board determining a policy framework for performing its functions, we are proposing that the board be given the power to determine a regulatory strategy. And when the board does that, it must first submit that regulatory strategy for approval to the minister within 3 months after the date that the amendment would have taken effect. But importantly is that within 6 months, the minister must publish the approved regulatory strategy in the Gazette. And the Minister of the Regulatory Board is also given a power to be able to initiate any amendment that may be required to the regulatory strategy that would have been published by the minister. Next slide. The other comment that we received related to the number of number of meetings of committees. The comment is that we should keep the number of meetings at a minimum of 4 per year. So we just want to indicate that the proposal is supported, and then the committee would be requested to consider retaining the provision as is in the current act, which is a minimum of four meetings per year for the committees. Thank you. Next slide. We also received comments in relation to the composition of the disciplinary committee and the panel for hearings in section 24A and which is clause 7 of the bill. The comment required clarity with regard to the composition of the disciplinary committee in addition to auditors and legally qualified. Because what you would find in the act is that it only makes reference to the committee being composed of one third of legal auditors and one third of legally qualified persons. And the clarity required there is that to indicate what would then comprise the other one third. And also the other comment related to the number of panel members, that we should make it at least three. So the response with regard to the clarity that one third of the disciplinary committee, it is that we make a proposed amendment to clarify that the other one third would be comprised of other suitably qualified persons that the board would have appointed to the committee. And we also support the proposal that the panel hearing should always be comprised of a minimum of three members, two of whom would be a legally qualified person and the auditor member. Next slide. The next comment relates to the next slide. Oh yeah, that's the one. The next comment relates to the chairperson of the disciplinary committee and the chair of the panel of hearing. And the comment related to the seniority of the chair of the disciplinary committee. And there was also a proposal that the chair of the disciplinary committee should be a retired judge or a senior legal person with more than 20 years experience. And our response to that is that we're proposing that the chair of the disciplinary committee be a retired judge or senior counsel. And the reason being that senior counsel, when someone is given the status of senior counsel, that person is senior enough and experienced enough, and we felt that 20 years may not be very reasonable to consider. And then we also proposed that the chairperson of the disciplinary panel should be the legally qualified member of the disciplinary committee or of the disciplinary panel. Next slide. The other comment we received related to the issue of the referral of non-audit matters to professional bodies by IRBA. And there was also a proposal that we define the term non-audit in the Act. And as you would be aware, the Act currently in Section 1 does define what audit means. And our view is that since audit is defined, it is not necessary that we also define what non-audit is, because it would still mean that whatever is not regarded or defined, whatever does not fall within the definition of audit, then would simply be regarded as non-audit. And then we are proposing amendments that the details with regard to the referral of non-audit matters be dealt with in terms of the IRBA rules, and that the referral of non-audit matters should only be done if they fall within the constitution and the rules of the relevant professional body. Next slide. The next slide deals with the issue of search and seizure, and that you would find in section 48 and B which is clause 11 of the bill. The concerns raised relate to the constitutionality of the provisions that deal with search and seizure. And as we indicate in the slide, we are of the view that, and we do submit that the provisions that are currently found in section 48A and B, we are of the view that they are constitutionally sound. And maybe one should also indicate at this stage that the principles that you find in those provisions are very much in line, if not similar, to some of the provisions that are found in legislation that has recently been passed by Parliament dealing with search and seizure. And we have also want to indicate that the stakeholders did indicate certain areas for refinement, some of which have now been included in the proposed amendments. And examples of those would be that the proposed amendment now do clarify the fact that whoever would be authorized or is to be authorized to conduct a search and seizure must be somebody with the necessary qualification. And also importantly, that person would have to be issued with a certificate that he or she can produce as part of that identification before conducting a search if and when requested to do so. And there's also a provision that is aimed at a proposed provision that is aimed at protecting the persons that are in the premises that are being searched and when they are being asked questions, to the effect that whatever responses or answers they give to the authorized person when conducting the search, those questions, answers may not be used in any criminal proceedings. So the proposed provisions also provide clarity on the criteria that would be followed before a warrant is issued. Next slide, please. This slide deals with the issue of reconsideration of disciplinary decisions, and the comment or comments that we received related to the fact that the amendment bill currently does not provide for a right to either an internal or external appeal against disciplinary decisions. And our view is that although the bill does not provide for an internal appeal or appeal to the courts against these decisions, it however does not take away the right for those decisions to be taken to court for review by affected individuals. And we also want to indicate that the grounds for reviews by court in terms of the promotion of Administrative Justice Act, PAJA, our view is that they are sufficiently extensive to offer any protections or protection to persons that may have been affected by such decisions. For example, if you look at Section 6 of PAJA, it lists a number of those grounds. I'm just going to mention some of the examples of those grounds. So you may take a decision for review if one believes that the decision was is biased, or the decision was taken in a procedural unfair manner, or the decision was materially influenced by an error of law, or it was based on ulterior motives or purpose, or the decision was taken after having considered irrelevant considerations or factors, or it was taken in bad faith, or if one believes that the decision is arbitrary or capricious, or that the action is not rationally connected to the purpose or information before the decision maker, or if one believes that the action taken is either unconstitutional or unlawful. So on that basis, we are of the view that these are sufficiently extensive grounds upon which affected individuals would be able to take any decision that the committee may have taken, of which the individual feels prejudiced. The next slide, please. There was also comments with regard to sanctions, and specifically the power to determine fines by the minister. The comment was that we should consider determining these fines in the Act and not do it in a separate instrument. And also the other comment was that we should consider including in the bill factors that must be considered before a sanction is imposed or sanctions are imposed. We are of the view that to determine the maximum amount of fine in the Act is not desirable because it does not allow for flexibility. And because these are amounts, these are likely to require changes quite often. And I think you should go back to the slide on sanctions, please. Yes, we are of the view that because amounts may not necessarily be relevant after a few years, it would be undesirable to have those in the Act, because each time you want to change the amount, then you would have to go through another legislative process, which as I said, is not desirable. This slide on sanctions, we seem to have gone back to search and seizure. I think you're going back.
Sorry, just indicate what slide number is it?
I think it's slide 14. Oh, is it Alan? Sorry, MP. Next one. Yes. We are ever proposing that the minister be given the power to determine, we retain the minister's power to determine this maximum fund, but that it be done on the recommendation of the board. And furthermore, we are also proposing that the minister must publish the proposed maximum fine for public comment for at least 30 days. And as to the required comment that we should include factors to be considered before imposing a sanction, if you look at the current bill, it already allows for affected auditors to submit mitigating factors for consideration before a sanction is determined. So we are of the view that given that provision, it may not necessarily be a good idea to include a list of factors that must be included or that must be considered before sanctions are determined. Next slide, please, Alan. The next slide relates to comment on section 57A and B in the current, in clause 16 of the bill. And the comment is that the bill should provide for disclosure of information in public interest in order to combat unlawful and unethical conduct, and also to ensure appropriate protection of personal information. And also other comment was that we should make provision that allows the sharing of information by IRBA with professional bodies in respect of the referral of non-audit matters. So we wish to indicate that IRBA does publish names of those found guilty of improper conduct if it is the entity audited was a public interest entity, and or if the respondent is a repeat offender, and that you can refer to an IRBA policy on sanctions which was issued in December 2016. And we also went to indicate that like any other organ of state, IRBA is bound by the Protection of Personal Information Act, and IRBA has to implement that act. So in that regard, we do reiterate this requirement in the proposed amendments to Section 57A. And importantly, there's also now a new paragraph in the proposed Section 57A2, which makes provision for the sharing of information with professional bodies in respect of referral of non-audit matters. And if I'm not mistaken, that concludes the presentation on responses to the comments submitted on the Auditing Profession Amendment Bill. And I wish to take this opportunity to say thank you very much to you, Chairperson, and honorable members of the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. The presentation is much appreciated. Irma, do you have anything that you want to add? Or
thank you so much.
You feel you are covered by Treasury.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman. We are covered. It was comprehensively covered by National Treasury colleagues, so we thank you very much for that. We had various consultations, iterations, engagements, and this is the landing we have landed on now. So thank you. It was covered by Treasury.
Thank you so much. Honorable members, this is an opportunity to interact with the responses from National Treasury and IRBA. Can Teboho and Alan assist me in identifying hands, please, for members to interact with the presentation? Do we have any hands over there, Teboho?
For now, there's no hands, Chair.
Okay. Maybe I can make a comment that says the responses from National Treasury and IRBA are much appreciated. There's an indication that our government is listening to the people, because there is no antagonism between what Treasury has presented here with what the stakeholders, your SICAs, Deloitte and Ernst & Young, presented to the committee. However, having said that, because they have managed to make amendments in the Auditing Professions Amendment Bill to accommodate, and where it is not practical, it has not happened, and I think it is understandable. But where I have a clarity question is where the stakeholders had indicated that the chairperson of the panel for hearings be a retired judge. I heard National Treasury mentioning, for instance, the issue of the person being senior, the issue of the person being legally qualified. Can I have an indication as to whether you are taking the point of the stakeholders on a retired judge, or you're just saying you're looking for these characteristics in the person who will chair? And just secondly, for me, I remember vividly how I had questioned them on their softening on the issue of search and seizure. And I want to really commend National Treasury and IRBA for sticking to their guns, especially when there is evidence of constitutionality of the areas that have been included in the bill. Can you talk to the issue of the chairperson of the panel?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I hope you can hear me.
Yes.
To indicate, the proposal that we're making is that the chairperson of the committee should be a retired judge or a senior counsel. Why we added senior counsel is that there's a risk that we may not find a retired judge that's available. So that's why we have the alternative. And when it comes to the panels, because the committee consists of a group of people consisting of lawyers with 10 years experience, and then formerly registered auditors also with 10 years experience, and then other suitably qualified persons. So what we're proposing now is that in the case of a panel constituted to hear a particular matter, the chairperson must be the legally qualified person. So that person must have at least 10 years experience. So that's the proposal that we make to the committee to consider.
Okay. I think it's also very fair in the sense that you're not limiting yourself to just retired judge. You're just saying retired judges or retired judge. However, senior, legally qualified, experienced, and so on should also be a consideration in the event that a retired judge cannot be accessed. Honorable members, at the end of the day, this amendment bill is not necessarily a controversial bill per se. And therefore, I understand if there are no other hands that want to contribute on the discussion, because I think members also had an interaction. A vibrant interaction with their stakeholders during the public hearing, and not and it's understood if there's satisfaction generally amongst the members. Can I check once again if there aren't any comments either from National Treasury and IRBA, as well as members, if for instance there are last minute thoughts. Can we check that just the last time before we close?
There are no additional hands, ma'am, but probably we can check if the stakeholders have got any comments to make.
Okay. If the stakeholders are here, can they make a comment? Who wants to speak amongst the stakeholders?
Chair, it's Alan. Michael Marchant, I think from Open Secret, and then Matthew Parks from Cassato as well.
Okay. Micah, you can go first.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, everyone, honourable members and other stakeholders. I just had one question of clarity on Treasury's presentation, which was around the publishing of information, so particularly the names of those in disciplinary committees. And if I saw correctly, it was that information would be published if the audited entity is a public interest entity. And I was just hoping we could get clarity on how that would be defined, whether a public interest entity would only refer to a public entity, or it would be any entity where either their conduct or something that they're doing, you know, implicates the public interest. So yeah, clarity on that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Michael. Comrade Matthew.
Okay. No, thanks very much, Comrade Chair. Just two quick questions from my side. I think we welcome the response of Treasury to agree that the amount of meetings for the board should be at least 4 a year. I think that's a helpful issue. The only other two issues we had raised, Comrade Chair, was about in clause 7E, about the limitation of searches during normal office hours. We felt, Comrade Chair, that was an unnecessary indulgence on the accused, for lack of better words, and it should be government should have the right to do sessions, teachers at any time of the day. It shouldn't be limited to office hours. I think for us that was a small issue, Comrade Chair. The last issue, Chair, was a new proposal from our side that we had raised, was relating to the IRBA's own in-house rule about mandatory rotation of firms every 10 years. We thought that was such a critical issue to address the kind of incestuous and often corrupt and unhealthy relationship, conflict of interest. We thought that is such a critical anti-corruption tool for the benefit of everybody, including the auditing profession, that should actually be elevated into the bill to be a legislative requirement, not an in-house internal rule, which can always be amended down the road if people fall off the side. And Chair, we thought actually it should be a rotation every 5 years. 10 years is a very long time, as we've seen in our own history in the past decade. So I think it was just those two proposals, Comrade Chair. And thanks for giving us the chance to just comment quickly. Thank you, Comrade Chair.
Okay. Thank you so much. National Treasury and IRBA. First question by Michael on the public interest entities.
Sorry, Chair, it's Alan again. There's a Carla Budgics who's raised a hand as well.
Okay, they can get in and identify themselves, in fact, introduce themselves.
Good morning, Chair. It's Carla Budrix from Deloitte. I've given comments during the first round of hearings. I would just like to, maybe it's just a comment on the disciplinary committee. Maybe just to understand that there's a distinction between the panel and the disciplinary committee. So I would just like to clarify that point, that the disciplinary committee will be chaired by a retired judge, and that the panel will then be constructed by the retired judge, and that the panel will be chaired then by legally qualified persons. I just wanted to clarify that point because that's my understanding, and I think that's what the response is from Treasury. And then secondly, I just want to ask about the appeal procedure that I think my colleague Olwey Lahutsi, Advocate Mulahutsi, rightfully said that PAJA makes provision for reviews in instances of bias where matters were heard procedurally unfairly.
I'm sorry.
Influenced by error and so forth. I would just
Delight? Would you just repeat this last sentence because you got cut off at some point?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. So I would just like to clarify on PAJA. We agree that PAJA deals with procedurally unfair matters, where the law is applied in bad faith and so forth. But I would just like to understand, where does it deal with the incorrect finding based on merit, where a case was heard but the merits were incorrectly assessed? And that's why we were asking for the appeal, because nowhere does it deal with a finding that is based on incorrect merit, and I would just like to understand if the committee can maybe consider that. Thank you.
Okay. Over to you, Treasury and or IRBA.
Thank you, Chairman. We got Gillian who will answer on the publishing, and then we'll refer to National Treasury and IRBA. We'll do the same thing. Thank you. Gillian, take it.
Thank you very much. The response on the publication is that the amendments now state very clearly that any matter that goes through a disciplinary hearing, the name of the practitioner involved in that disciplinary hearing process definitely will be published. They're still at a consent order level where we reach a settlement agreement is an option around whether the name gets published or not. And that is because at those types of matters, the degree of seriousness and the impact of those matters is considered by the committee in regards to, you know, whether publication is actually justified, because not every single error has an huge impact on all of society. So the criteria that has been set by the IBA in the sanctions policy with regards to consent orders or settlement agreements, as they now refer to, is that if the entity involved in that particular matter is defined as a public interest entity, without a doubt, the practitioner will be named. The other reason at a consent order or settlement agreement level is that the person will be named if they are a repeat offender. So in those two instances, categorically, the offenders will be named at a settlement agreement level, but there is still room for the enforcement committee on settlement orders to order general publication, because publication in itself is a sanction and severely affects the rights of the, the reputation of the practitioner. And, you know, some of the issues that we do deal with are not that significant that it warrants that level of punishment. So yes, we are still dealing with the fact that there was some transgression, but the impact of that transgression gets taken into account in looking at publication of names. Thank you.
Okay. The next set of questions.
National Treasury will refer to on the search and seizure by COSATU. Alwe?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. With regards to the comment by COSATU that the amendment bill does not allow for search and seizure to be conducted after business hours, it should be noted that in fact, the proposed section 48, capital A, subsection 4, does, subsection 4, paragraph A, does allow search and seizure to take place at night if when the official who, or authorized person who is to conduct the search and seizure did indicate in the application for a warrant that they would want to conduct this search at night. I can just quickly, it's not a long provision, I can just quickly read it. It says that an entry or search of premises in terms of this section must be done at a reasonable time and within ordinary business hours, and then A, unless the warrant authorizing it expressly authorizes entry at night. So meaning if in the application it is indicated that the search would be done at night and it's granted, then searches at night would be able to take place. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any outstanding questions that you need to deal with?
Yes, Chairperson, there are two areas I'm going to deal with. The first one is the mandatory rotation rule, the proposal from COSATU that it be included in the
rotation, act. Yes.
Yes, we would like to submit that since this is not an area that's being amended or considered for amended in this current bill, and also that we need further consultation on this matter, that this rather be included in the next round of amendments, because we do acknowledge, even from the public submissions that we received, that we do require to review the bill quite soon, that this matter be considered then, and also be, before we table the bill in Parliament, be subjected to public comment in respect of that rule. And then I just want to deal with the issue of the right of appeal. As my colleague indicated in his presentation, that the grounds for review under PADA is quite wide, different to the review that existed prior to PADA. And also, for instance, if it's submitted that evidence was interpreted wrongly, they can still raise the issue of that the decision was not rational, and on that basis take it forward. The bill in no way limits the right to administrative justice in terms of the Constitution, and it also doesn't limit the right of access to courts under Section 34 of the Constitution. So I think there's one matter that my colleague Rebecca from IRBA will respond to.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to respond to the question regarding the difference between the committee and the panel. Kala is right. We do have the committee. The committee is constituted by a number of people. Currently in the Act, it's unlimited, and it would have 3/3 of those committee members being legally qualified legal practitioners of no less than 10 years experience. And then the other 1/3 would then be constituted by former RAs equally of no less than 10 years experience in auditing. And then the other 1/3 would be suitably qualified persons. This is where we would have your forensic auditors, your chartered accountants, and any other skill the committee would require. And then this committee then would be chaired by a senior counsel or retired judge. Now, the senior counsel or retired judge is not a sitting chairperson in each and every hearing, but it is a chairperson that oversees the functioning of the committee. The chairperson will then be responsible for the appointment of the panel members for each hearing and for ensuring consistency and efficiency in how we run our disciplinary processes. This now moves away from a situation where the IBA executives actually appoint the disciplinary committee or the disciplinary panel members, as is currently the case. So we're trying to create that form of independence. And then now the panel, which will be hearing the actual hearing, which will be chaired by a legally qualified person. So now this is not a senior counsel or a judge, but rather an attorney or advocate of no less than 10 years experience. The attorney will chair, and we have said that we have had issues in securing senior counsel or retired judge for each and every hearing, as is currently the requirement in terms of the Act. And this means now that our cases take longer to be heard because of their availability to hear matters. So we have said that attorney with no less than 10 years practicing experience is quite competent because they are often appointed as arbitrators, and they will be also having the support of the actual committee chairperson, who is the retired judge or senior counsel, in ensuring the consistency of rulings. So that's the difference between the two. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairman. We've responded to all the questions.
Thank you so much. I love being chairman, you know. It gives me stakeholders. I hope now you will be happy saying that those that have not been considered at this time will be considered in the next taking, which is next year. Member, right, going once and twice. Okay. Thank you so much, honorable members. Thank you so much to the National Treasury officials. Thank you to IBRA, and thank you to our own officials in Parliament who have been involved in the work of taking the process forward. And now that the people have spoken, I hope that the department will go ahead and give us a final draft of the Auditing Professions Amendment Bill. That having been said, the meeting is formally adjourned. Thank you very much.